Welcome to the Innate Vitality Code podcast, your source of science-backed information and inspiration on holistic healing, building resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Pennington. I'm an integrative physician, acupuncturist, and positive psychology neuroscience nerd. For over 20 years, I've been healing and teaching in my wellness practice, in the media, on stages, and around the world, as part of my soul's mission to end suffering and raise the consciousness on the planet. This podcast does not provide medical advice or psychotherapy. Consult your healthcare provider before implementing what you hear on this show. All right, my friends, welcome. Welcome, beautiful humans. Whether you are a guide, a seeker, a therapist, or just a curious soul who's been cracked wide open by a medicine journey, you are in the right place. Today, we are going to be talking about the idea of a bad trip, because sometimes what we call bad is actually a breakthrough. It's what we might even consider a breakthrough in disguise. And sometimes it's trauma that's reenacted, and sometimes not. And that's where it gets a little bit nuanced. And this nuance is the soul of this masterclass. So why now? Many of you already know this. We're in the middle of a psychedelic renaissance. And while that is exciting, it's also dangerous. I've spent more than two decades guiding people through trauma, through spiritual awakenings, and psychedelic initiations. And I can tell you, not all ego deaths lead to enlightenment. Some lead straight to emergency rooms or psych wards, or worse, spiritual communities that gaslight the hell out of you while smiling through Palo Santo smoke. And that's why I'm here. That's why you're here. We really do need to reclaim the wisdom and to be able to tell the difference between a dark night of the ego and a genuine spiritual emergency. So maybe you've heard of this term, the spiritual emergency. Stan and Christina Groff coined this term to describe what happens when a personal awakening process becomes so intense, so disorienting, that it disrupts your normal functioning. Now, it can look like psychosis, but it's not necessarily a disorder. It might be Kundalini awakening, ego dissolution, archetypal flooding, hearing from spirits or dead relatives. It could even be a sudden past life recall. And if it's not held with care, it can tip into a crisis. And so the early Groff work really reminds us that this is sacred terrain, but you need the right map and the right guides. So right now, this is happening probably more often than you think. With the explosion of microdosing, mushroom ceremonies, ayahuasca retreats, and even ketamine infusions that are being broadcast all over Instagram, more and more people are being cracked open without the tools or the container to actually make sense of what they're experiencing. And people are mistaking trauma flashbacks for shamanic visions. Facilitators are calling dissociation a sign of spiritual advancement. And when someone's nervous system collapses and gets labeled ego death and then swept under the rug, this is not just a clinical issue. It's an ethical issue. And it could be a spiritual crisis. Now, recently, you may have read my Substack article. There was a conversation on the Aubrey Marcus podcast. It was framed as a deep dive into radical monogamy, and it sent up major red flags. I invite you to check out my Substack about it. And it's sent off a lot of triggers, not because of the relationship model itself. Love is expansive, but because of the dynamic. These two women were speaking from what looks like submissive worship and not sovereignty. The energy of grooming disguised as growth. And at the center of it all is Mark Gaffney, a so-called guru with a well-documented history of abuse. And when we stop questioning these dynamics, when we mistake charisma for consciousness, we invite real harm into sacred spaces. And when we train people to override their own intuition in the name of so-called enlightenment, that's why we've got to speak up. So definitely check out that Substack if you haven't already. So why this masterclass? Well, people are waking up, but some of them are actually breaking down, and we need better ways to hold them and ourselves. Some people are breaking through, but some people are being gaslit in the name of growth. And too many people are asking themselves, was that the medicine or manipulation? So this class today is to give you a framework, a language, a guiding light, so that you can tell the difference, so that you can protect your own path. And if you happen to be a facilitator, this is going to be useful so that you can truly hold others in integrity and safety. So I do want to share a personal story. It's one that I carry with deep reverence because it reminds me that even when a ceremony seems perfect, what follows may not be. So this happened at a retreat where I was one of the lead facilitators, and there was a participant, we'll call him Daniel, although that's not his real name. He had a beautiful journey with the medicine. He went deep, he wept, he saw expansive visions, and there were no red flags, no dissociation, no erratic behavior, and he shared very meaningfully in the integration and in the closing circle, grounded, grateful, solid. And we had a month of integration calls planned. During the first week, Daniel chimed in to say, I haven't really been able to sleep since the ceremony. I still feel high. Now that's not uncommon. So we suggested the basics, gentle grounding practices, screen and sleep hygiene, magnesium, herbs, breath work, and no benzodiazepines. No hard shutdowns unless it's absolutely necessary. Week two, still no sleep. And then he said, I feel like my mind is moving too fast for my body. My thoughts won't slow down. So I got on the phone with him because sometimes it's not what someone says, it's how they sound. And as someone with clinical experience with people with bipolar disorder, with mania and psychosis, I can pick up on that tone. Now, while Daniel was not delusional, something did feel off. His energy was revved up. His thoughts were grand and fast and slippery. So I asked, would you consider staying with family or a friend just for a few days, just to have someone physically with you? And then he paused and said, I don't want to go to my family because this is kind of what happened to my dad. So I asked more. Turns out his father had had a psychiatric condition. And not only had Daniel not disclosed this on his intake form, he had actively avoided the topic in prep calls. So when I took this back to our team, no one had any idea. There had been no red flags in screening and no signs in ceremony. But here we were, post-retreat, navigating a situation that, if misunderstood, could easily be misdiagnosed as mania or dismissed as integration, fatigue. To his credit, Daniel agreed to see a psychedelic-informed psychiatrist. He was not hospitalized. He was not shamed. He was supported, and he was given temporary grounding medication that helped him to sleep. And a few weeks later, he was doing really well, but that could have gone very differently. And let's be real, in a lot of settings, he could have been told, oh, you're crazy. You need to be on meds forever. Or worse, he might have just tried to white knuckle his way through it, spiraling into full-blown crisis with no one to call. So why do I share this? Because not all destabilization is trauma, and not all spiritual emergence is psychosis. But without skilled, trauma-informed, spiritually literate guidance, it's way too easy to confuse one for the other. And it's easy to respond in ways that re-traumatize, pathologize, or institutionalize someone who might just be going through the birth canal of awakening. So how do we tell the difference? How do we intervene without harm? So I really want to break that down next. How to tell the difference between a spiritual emergency and psychosis. So in this story I just shared, Daniel's experience could have easily been mistaken for a psychotic break or the precursor. But what was actually happening was closer to what Stan and Christina Groff would call a spiritual emergency, a non-ordinary state of consciousness that's intense, destabilizing, and potentially transformative if supported correctly. So let's unpack how to tell the difference. First, what is a spiritual emergency? Feel free to type in the chat if you know, but according to the Groffs, a spiritual emergency is a crisis that occurs when the process of growth and transformation becomes too rapid or intense and overwhelms the person's usual coping mechanisms. It's not pathology, it's a threshold. An awakening that is so raw, it disorients. And some of the key features could be a deep sense of meaning beyond this turmoil, or a feeling that something profound is unfolding. It could be emotional or energetic overload, but still tethered to self-awareness. There could be this desire to make sense of it, not escape it. And it's often accompanied by mystical imagery or archetypal encounters, past life recall, or spontaneous kriyas, body movements. Psychosis, on the other hand, tends to include delusions, false beliefs that are unshakable and disconnected from this shared reality. It could include hallucinations, like hearing voices or seeing things that others don't. It could be paranoia, often with no basis in the environment. It could be disorganized thinking or speech, a loss of coherence or a sense of self, and the inability to function in daily life or to care for oneself. So here's the key question that I often ask. Does this person still have a foot in consensual reality? If they can reflect on their experience, even question it, that's often a sign that they're not psychotic, even if what they're experiencing is intense or unfamiliar. Because psychosis often comes with zero insight. A spiritual emergency may come with overwhelm, but the person knows that something's happening, and they often seek out support to understand it. So when I share the replay, I'll give you a little cheat sheet with some more distinctions between a spiritual emergency and psychosis. So now the question is, how do we respond? Because this is where harm can happen, even with the best intentions. And too many people have been shamed, labeled, or medicated unnecessarily because the people around them just didn't understand what was unfolding. So here's what I suggest. If it's likely a spiritual emergency, we start by normalizing the experience. We know that this kind of awakening can feel destabilizing, but we communicate, you're not broken. Stay close and try to listen without trying to fix them. Help the person get grounded with breath, with physical touch, if they've consented to that, in nature, with food, with weighted blankets, salt baths. You want to contain it without escalating it. And if needed, connect them to someone trained in spiritual emergence work. And always assess their basic needs. Are they sleeping, eating, drinking? Are they safe? And what do we not do? Don't diagnose or label. Don't dismiss or mock their experience. If you can, don't rush to medicate unless it's necessary for safety. And don't try to snap them out of it. And never leave them isolated without support. If you're unsure, always pause and ask, what's true here and what's overwhelm? You don't need to be the fixer, but if you can see this person in their humanity and honor the potential within the chaos, you might become part of their emergence and not their emergency. So I thought it might be helpful for you to see what the Grofs termed spiritual emergence and spiritual emergencies. And I want to know how many of these you've actually experienced. For the facilitators here, for those of you who've sat with sacred medicine or had a long-standing yoga or meditation practice, these spiritual emergency signs don't only come up with psychedelics or intense breath work. They can come up with other spiritual practices. So let's get into it. The first one is psycho-spiritual death and rebirth. This is the classical ego death. It could be a sudden or a progressive dissolution of self-identity. It can feel like you're dying. It can feel very disorienting, a sense of emptiness, followed by or alternated with periods of clarity, peace, or joy. This can often be seen with high-dose psychedelics, deep meditation, breathwork, and near-death experiences. The second type is the Kundalini awakening. That's where people describe a surge of bioenergetic or spiritual energy rising through the body. This can feel like heat, tremors, energy, currents, electricity. It can include spontaneous movements or kriyas, inner sounds or lights. And again, these are triggered by breathwork, can also happen in sex with sexual spiritual activation, or psychedelics like mushrooms, ayahuasca, 5-MeO-DMT. The third type is episodes of what we call unity consciousness, or a mystical experience where people describe a direct encounter with a transcendent state, feeling like you're one with God or one with all of existence, one with Source. This can feel incredibly blissful, a feeling of profound love, awe, a loss of this sense of separateness, time distortion, and it can lead to some sort of a spiritual initiation if it's ungrounded. The fourth type is the shamanic crisis, or an initiatory illness. You definitely hear this in stories of people going through shamanic initiation in indigenous cultures. It can often happen as a symbolic death and rebirth journey, and comes with a sense of calling, like people are being called to the shamanic path or to become a medicine person. This can be involving intense visions, spiritual contact, archetypal dreams, a sense of being chosen or called. And this is culturally validated in indigenous traditions and shouldn't be pathologized, but for most of us in the West, we don't have that same container of how to look at this. The fifth type of spiritual emergence or emergency is past life experience. And this is where people have a strong sense of reliving events from another lifetime. This can come as flashbacks, body sensations, intense grief or terror, even speaking unknown languages. And this could be symbolic or archetypal, but it's usually helpful for some sort of therapeutic narrative work for people who are really trying to tie a cohesive narrative about their life's journey. The sixth type is the near-death experience, or NDE-like states. Feelings of dying or crossing over to the other side without a physiological death. This is what happened to me in 2005 with those classical symptoms of that tunnel vision, a life review, meeting guides, floating out of the body. These NDEs often come with a sense of life mission or urgency afterward. I definitely encourage you, if you haven't seen it already, to watch my TED Talk, because I definitely talk about my own experience with my NDE. And I've written about that in the Real Self-Love Handbook. So it's really helpful to hear someone who wasn't in a medicine state who also had one of these experiences. So check that out if you haven't already. The seventh type of spiritual emergence is an encounter with archetypal beings or realms. This can be a contact with deities, demons, ancestors, or other mythic archetypes. Typically, people feel a sense of awe. It can be associated with fear or disorientation, and usually people are questioning, you know, what is real? Was that real? And so it's often helpful to use a symbolic framework like Jungian or mythological grounding, rather than saying, yes, you definitely were visited by an alien. You can look at symbolically, what does it represent? The eighth type is communication with other non-physical entities. Sometimes we call that channeling. Some people will often feel like they're getting guidance messages, or they're channeling voices not from their own conscious mind. That can come through automatic writing, an inner dialogue or monologue, mediumship, and even just calling them downloads. So here, discernment is really essential to avoid over-identification with this and also to avoid paranoia. Now, out-of-body experiences, without necessarily the near-death part, involve perceiving like you've left the physical body and traveled elsewhere. A lot of people will describe floating above their body, watching themselves from above, or even traveling across space or dimensions. And this can be often reported with ketamine, with DMT, with lucid dreaming. And that's both in those situations, and it can linger afterward. The 10th type of spiritual emergence is psychic opening. And a lot of folks in my community have described this. It's having this increased extrasensory perception, this heightened sensitivity, heightened empathy, or intuitive knowing. Some people will say that they now can sense energy or even see energy or light or color differently. It could involve telepathy, emotional flooding, even animal communication. It's tricky because this may require some energetic hygiene and boundary work. So it's one to be on the lookout for, because sometimes once these psychic gifts are turned on, they often don't turn off. And the 11th type of spiritual emergence that the Grofs wrote about are intense synchronicities and reality shifts. People will sometimes feel like they're tuning into a flood of meaningful coincidences, or feeling like they're in a simulation. They might see number patterns, symbolic messages, or a sense that there's some sort of cosmic orchestration. And that can be really empowering, but it can also be destabilizing depending on the context and the integration. There are some other things that we often see based on my clinical observations and in the psychedelic realm. We can often see trauma release that can be mistaken for awakening. Unresolved trauma can emerge in these altered states and look like a spiritual breakthrough. And that can be body-based flashbacks, primal screaming, emotional flooding. And that's why we really encourage people to have a trauma-informed integration container. There's also existential crisis, or a sense of losing one's identity. You know, we hear people say, like, after this experience, I don't even know who I am or what's real. You know, I've built my life on all of this past, and I don't know what or who I am anymore. And that can feel very much like depersonalization. There can be social withdrawal, a sense of meaninglessness, emptiness. And it's not always permanent, so you don't always have to worry about that, but it's one that we need to take note of. This is one that I recently heard about with one of my colleagues in one of my peer supervision groups. She had a client who had ketamine infusion elsewhere and then had some integration sessions, but was really untethered. Just was like, I left my body, I was completely out of this consciousness. And when she landed, the ketamine infusion center sent her home because her vital signs looked good. She knew what her name was. She knew where she was. Like, they do a mini mental status check and check your vitals, and then they let you go home. Somebody else driving, of course. But it persisted for days. She was not fully back. Fortunately, you know, my colleague is well versed in psychedelics and has been trained and facilitates. So she was able to help this woman get grounded again. But it can often lead to really painful and scary stuff. Like, this woman's husband was actually afraid to leave her alone with her children because she just was so untethered. Another thing that we often see is that it can be this prolonged period of feeling like you're going through the dark night of the ego, where everything feels a little bit lost and painful and even depressive. But that too can often be a precursor to awakening and rebirth. So it's definitely important to look at these things. You know, there's also projections and transference that happens during retreats and group settings that can really impact people in terms of having a bad trip, not necessarily because of the medicine, but because we're in such a vulnerable state. There are sometimes interpersonal dynamics where we can feel attacked by other people's energy. Trauma can get reenacted. I was sitting in ceremony with someone who said the two facilitators for her represented her parents, and it really activated for her some of her trauma wounding, not for any fault of them, but just what was coming alive. And that can be worsened if your facilitators are unskilled or they're biased, if they're not trauma informed, especially in the cases where minorities, trans, non-binary folks, or people who are just perceived as too much, like, it can really be destabilizing if you don't have a grounded team who knows how to handle that. And then, of course, spiritual bypass and ego inflation. When this awakening kind of bypasses emotional maturity or self-awareness, that can lead to this sense of superiority or denial or avoidance. So I'm giving you just a flavor of how disorientation, crisis, and even spiritual chaos can arise after peak states or psychedelics. It can feel like everything's falling apart. But what if that's not wrong? Taking into account all of our diagnostics for what is psychosis, what if the breakdown is actually part of the breakthrough and you just need a map for it? I mean, this is what I learned firsthand in my own initiatory experiences. And then after 2 decades of guiding people through healing and transformation and medicine work, I created a map. And it's why we use this cornerstone process to navigate the dark night of the ego, when the crumbling of who we were programmed or traumatized into being, as that's crumbling away, we want to move toward the dawn of the soul and an emergence with the true self. So if you haven't seen that or read that yet, I invite you to check out my book, From Darkness to Dawn. It's about the dark night of the ego and the dawn of the soul. And I include in it the 5 stages of falling into the abyss, burning in the crucible, twisting and turning through the labyrinth, finally seeing a light and ascending toward it, and then the rebirth or emergence. And on my Substack and on YouTube, I recorded a video that you can also see that could be really helpful for just breaking down these stages of the dark night of the ego and the dawn of the soul. So I thought it would be helpful to also share the roadmap, and that is the cornerstone process. It's mentioned in the Real Self-Love Handbook and in the Dark Night to Dawn guidebook. And the cornerstone process was really born in the trenches of my early clinical work with addiction recovery, eating disorders, and trauma healing. And then the cornerstone process evolved with my own rebirth through sacred medicine, that ego dissolution that happened in the south of France in my out-of-body near-death experience, and also through years of guiding integration. So you've maybe heard me talk about it. It is a 5-step holistic framework for navigating breakdowns, burnout, spiritual emergency, or identity collapse. The five cornerstones are awareness. This is about really seeing clearly, bringing the unconscious wounds, beliefs, and coping patterns into the light. In sacred medicine journeys, this might look like reliving a core wound or watching your ego dissolve. And that awareness is usually the flashlight to the shadow. And this step really helps us get clarity. And then in step two, we move to acceptance. This is the step that helps us dissolve shame, blame, and self-hatred. It's where grief is honored. It's where we start saying, even this is a part of me, and we can move toward wholeness. So I think of acceptance as the bridge between suffering and softness. In step three, we move to accountability, where we shift from victim consciousness to conscious choice. We reclaim our power and sovereignty, not in a performative way, but in a deeply embodied way. This is not about blame. It's about claiming authorship of our story from here forward. Step four is inspired action. This is integration in motion. It's about taking new aligned actions that are really rooted in your soul's truth through ritual work, boundary setting, reevaluating relationships, and even creative expression. This is where transformation hits the real world. And the final step is appreciation. And that's about anchoring in gratitude, not spiritual bypassing, but true recognition of your evolution. It's where we celebrate the emergence of the soul self. So the cornerstone process really braids together psychology, somatics, spiritual insight, and narrative work into one clear, cohesive container. It's soul safe, it's trauma informed, and it works because it's human. And that's what many of us need. So as you know, I'll also be sharing how you can get certified in using the cornerstone process in your own coaching or therapeutic work if you have clients that might be experiencing sacred medicines. And I find that this is really helpful. This framework was useful for an individual, a client who was going through ayahuasca, who had a lot of family trauma. And after their powerful ceremony experience, they had flashbacks of childhood abuse and just weeks of emotional shutdown. And using this cornerstone process as a framework, we first grounded the memory with awareness. And then we created a safe space for grief and processing. That's the acceptance stage. And we followed that by reclaiming their voice and setting boundaries. That's the accountability. And then we practiced some of the voice activation exercises, like what we do on retreat, as part of inspired action. And honoring the return to self, that was the appreciation. So we'll definitely share more of these kind of experiences for you to get a sense of why I'm sharing the cornerstone process with the world. And specifically, we know that the cornerstone process is useful for holistic healing, for trauma recovery, reparenting the inner child. So if you or your clients know that you're going to be sitting with a medicine that are bringing up these themes, you want to be able to connect the dots from out there, their entire life spiral. And the cornerstone process helps you do that. And it's backed by science and research, including internal family systems and gestalt therapy, addiction medicine, and even Eastern spiritual philosophy. It's very well-grounded and well-rounded, including cognitive therapy, mindfulness and meditation are woven in, as well as narrative therapy, as I've shared. So for those of you who might think you'd like to get certified, I'll be sharing how you can do that at the end of this call. You can check out on my website how we use the cornerstone process in prep, post-journey integration, and really throughout the life spiral. It really is a well-grounded approach. And we have a new cohort starting in July of 2025. You can use this holistic process through this 8-week certification program. So now I welcome your questions. You can email me if you are curious and check out the website. I'm doing 2 more live Q&A sessions about training with me if that's of interest. Yeah, so maybe some of you have heard of this concept that there are people who say there's no such thing as a bad trip. I don't know if you've ever heard that. There are literally facilitators who say, oh, there's no such thing as a bad trip, because what even if something bad happens, you're going to learn from it. You're going to grow from it. And I will say I agree with that with one caveat. A truly bad trip would be if someone abused you. And that is happening. There are medicine people who are taking advantage of people in their vulnerable state, being sexually abused or any sort of abuse. That's a bad trip, legit, period. Even if you were to learn after it. I would say that it is true that the medicine itself can be very challenging depending on what you're sitting with, from the vomiting and purging to just the physical discomfort or even the visions, or it can be destabilizing if you feel like you're blasted out of the universe. But it is true that with proper integration, most of these challenging experiences can lead to breakthroughs. Sometimes it does happen on your own, but by being in a community, you can join us in Sacred Psychedelic Saturday. You can work with me one-on-one if you want to process, but also being in a community where you can actually share and hear from other people helps to normalize and helps to guide you. So what's coming up for you as you think about these concepts? Yeah, go for it, Catherine. Hello.
I was thinking about the future of retreats and everything. Where I live in the UK, on my social media, there just seems to be all these different retreats happening. And literally a couple of years ago, this was like unheard of. And obviously, with the what you were saying about how, you know, facilitators need to be trauma informed and things like that. Obviously, in an ideal world, that would be how all the retreats are. But obviously, there's people that can't necessarily afford to go to like some retreats, or so they will choose to go to, you know, just these things on the internet. Like, it's a bit scary. And obviously, I think we're really lucky that we have this group where we can discuss this and protect ourselves. But it really scares me that there are people out there that don't have this space and don't have this knowledge. And I'm worried for them, you know, about having bad trips. But honestly, what I'm most worried about, and this probably sounds really selfish, is that all the good work that's been done in helping people to kind of like, you know, be open and accept these types of medicines. I'm scared that these bad trips, because of the oversaturation of these retreats, is going to like cause badness for everyone. That was my thing.
Thank you, Catherine. You're absolutely right. There are so many retreats and ceremony spaces opening up in the underground. Generally, they're not legal. So whether it's in the UK or throughout Europe, there are a lot of people who, some of them are well-trained underground facilitators, and some of them are these weekend, you know, they discovered that the medicine told them that they're going to be serving and they're going to be healing others, and they can sound very, very convincing. So it really is buyer beware. You've got to do your homework. So yes, the first thing is, if you have trauma in your history, you want to ask your facilitator and whoever else is going to be facilitating, what is your team's trauma training? You don't ask, are you trauma informed? Because they'll just say yes. What is your training? And if they won't answer, red flag. I also invite people to ask, you know, what is your lineage? If these are people who are claiming to do things like ayahuasca, where there generally is a spiritual lineage, find out. Do they have a teacher? Do they have a supervisor? Do they have anyone they quote unquote report to or not. That's a red flag for me, because first of all, there's this whole concept of cultural appropriation and indigenous reciprocity. That's one piece of it, but it's also about most true ayahuasqueros have come through a lineage. They have been sitting with medicine for years for their own journey, like drinking the medicine months and months on end for years before they ever were invited even just to clean up the puke buckets, let alone serve. And so there's this long line of apprenticeship and it being a part of their culture. So if you come from the West, you fly down to Brazil or Peru or Colombia and you have a few journeys and then all of a sudden you're going to start serving without that, that would be a red flag. And it does make us afraid because, you know, there was a case just in Italy where a person joined an ayahuasca retreat, didn't have any screening. That's another thing you can ask. What is your screening procedure? Do we get any calls with the ayahuasquero, the medicine keeper at all, or someone before we sit in the ceremony? So this individual in Italy was added at the last minute, went through no screening, and died. There's a whole investigation going on to find out, was it foul play? Was it the ayahuasca? We don't know yet. But these kinds of cases are happening all the time. And to your point, yeah, it makes us nervous that if all of these bad trips, deaths, sexual misconduct are happening, it's going to make it harder for the good people. But until there are regulations or until things get legalized or decriminalized in your space, you're going to have to ask these questions. And I would also ask, what is the prep and integration? What is your emergency plan if something were to go awry, whether on site or if something happened post-retreat? So these are all the good questions that we need to be asking. And unfortunately, there's not a way for people to share who they had a bad experience with. At least for the United States, like, there are laws. You can't just put on a website like, this person is unsafe, blah, 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 because you could get sued. So it would be nice if there was a directory of the people who are to be avoided. So we tend to gather in community and ask each other, like, have you heard of this center? Have you heard of this medicine keeper? Are they legit? Have they had any transgressions? So thank you for the question. Carolyn, I see your hand is up. What would you like to share?
What I wanted to share is a huge pattern I've been noticing. I'm a raver and I'm in the rave scene. And of course, you know, there's a lot of black market kind of stuff going on there. And I've been doing this many, many years. I absolutely love it. And what I've lost a couple of friends lately to, I guess, what I'm calling like psychedelic narcissism. And I see this a lot on dance floors and in, you know, all over the world. And what happens, the pattern tends to be somebody has an experience, you know, a psychedelic experience or many, and they do not class these things as a bad trip whatsoever. They really value the insights that they've had and come out of these things with these big insights and this newfound, you know, XYZ, and they think they are God's gift. They think they are God. They think they are above everybody else. And they have all these visions and insights. They leave their day jobs. They go and move country. One's in Portugal right now, who has left his very successful startup, moved to Portugal, and is gathering very vulnerable young men. And starting communes under the guise of like this beautiful hippie adventures of like, we all need to live and get back to the village lifestyle, which is so enticing and is actually a beautiful idea. And of course, we actually do need to do those things and get out of cities and blah, blah, blah. That's a whole other thing. But he is approaching these things from such a, and he's dishing out magic mushrooms to these like very vulnerable folks on a random Wednesday and for breakfast. And it's just so common what I'm describing. I can see you guys all nodding as well, because we've all got that friend, you know, or 10 of them or whatever. And like, they're not ever going to come to your talk because they don't feel like this is a bad trip. They feel like they have found their purpose and they're this and that. And they're just like, I don't know whether this is like my judgments or what have you, but they look and sound like they're psychotic, and that they really feel like they're God's gift. And you know, there's, so that's the Portugal guy. I've got this other Australian guy, he's married and he's now got this like tiny baby, and he went and did all kinds of ayahuasca retreats in all the in South America and all the places that you should, and with the shamans that are all the good ones that have had the good training. But he's walked out of there and he's received the integration and the knowledge from the shamans that about the psychedelic narcissism, and and they tell him, they've told him, he reports back to me that he didn't like the way the shamans spoke to him because they didn't agree that he was God's gift. And so he's just like, not that one. And he's cycled through all different shamans that have given him the same advice. And like, I don't really even know what my question is like, what do I do with these people? Like, I think maybe that's my question, is like, what, you know, like, this is so common in the psychedelic festival, you know, scene, that they just, yeah, I think I'm getting like, maybe my question is like, do you have any advice for me when I'm just surrounded by this, this stuff?
Thank you. Thank you, Carolyn. Thank you for sharing so openly. What you've described is rampant, not just in the raving scene, but from all the different festivals and Burning Man and so on. It is true that sitting with psychedelics, whether it's in ceremony or in raves, can lead to this ego inflation bordering all the way to what you're calling narcissism. And it's happening. I think the more that we inform people, the better. And you're right, some of the people who have lost touch with reality, that they don't have that check in place, they're not going to listen to a lecture like this. They're not going to look online. Unfortunately, in many of those cases, it's something has to break, whether it's a relationship or financial or legal. Now, there was a case out of Brazil of a young woman who was an Instagram, she was a social media socialite and really rose up in the ranks. And she's from Brazil, was doing all of like the empowerment seminars, and then sat with ayahuasca. And after that, completely changed and turned into what you're describing as this, I am God's gift. I now hear things. I am like an oracle. And she, in her case, started enticing women to come and work for her as a volunteer, but you had to pay money to come. And then she was grooming them and saying, you know, the way you're going to pay for this lifestyle is sex work. I know y'all think I'm joking. I will send you the link to her documentary, because so many families from Brazil found out that their daughters were off in the United States, and they tried to get them back, and they were even FaceTiming these girls, and they had been so brainwashed because she seemed so charismatic. She seemed like she really was hearing from God, and they were vulnerable. And when they're talking to their parents, they're like, no, I'm fine. I'm here by my own will. But a couple of the parents were able to get their daughters back, and eventually she was put in prison. I will find the link and send you the link to this documentary, because to your point, Carolyn, this woman did not wake up despite being imprisoned. They got permission to shoot the end of this documentary at the prison. They took her out to a yard and, you know, tried to make it look good for the camera. And she said, I've done nothing wrong. I was helping these people. Like, no connection to reality and consequences and the harm. And in those cases, there's nothing we can do. They either break down, get arrested, or harm themselves or others until law enforcement gets involved, or a psychiatric diagnosis or, you know, being put into a hospital. And so we have to be mindful. But the fact that you're here and you're asking these questions means you have that bit of insight. And maybe it is you create a buddy system where it's like, hey, you know, we're going to this rave, we're going to this party, let's have a pact between us that if I am ever like way far gone, I give you permission to like check me, to say, hey, babes, listen. Now, is it true that you can have an experience with psychedelics and truly feel like you've gotten a revelation about your life, about how you're living, that maybe you do need to leave the country or leave your company, leave your spouse? How many people have I worked with who had revelations about their gender preferences or sexual preferences? And it wasn't the medicine in most of these cases. These are things that they've known they needed to leave, and the medicine gave them, you know, the big revelation. Now, in my world, we also say our rule is at least 90 days. You don't make any life-changing decisions for 90 days after your ceremony. But if you're going off on a rave or a festival or in Peru and there's no follow-up, who's going to hold you to that standard? So you either need to be in therapy or have a coach or a facilitator or a community or somebody, a buddy that you can say, look, I had this revelation. I'm thinking of, you know, starting a commune, starting my own church. Like, are you willing to have that sense of integrity? So, Tara, I see your hand is raised.
I just wanted to add, I've had some of these experiences just through meditation retreats. I was in a meditation and we were led through a building with doors that we went into, and the last door we went into and sat down, and a God figure was to appear to us. And my God figure, the head was a ball of light, and we were supposed to talk, and mine didn't talk, we merged. And I was gone for the rest of the day. I was gone for, probably 6 hours. And they took me to a restaurant, and I'm just out there. And then a band started tuning up, and the noise, bam, it brought me back into my body. But merging with a spirit figure. So a number of these things I've done just through meditation, because I've been doing this shit for 40 years. And if you just keep going there, I was at with a spiritual leader, and I got out of the shower and had this ego death, and I wanted to talk and get support, and everybody had left. So wild things can happen, and it doesn't have to be in a chemically drugged state. But I become curious about, in these people who become messianic, it's like some kind of lever got tripped in brain chemistry. So that makes me curious about brains that luckily, like mine, I can come back. I'm no matter how dark the night of the soul, I just have this knowing that I guess I'm grounded, or so I know I can get back. And so I'm very curious about the brain or the life experiences or whatever it is that lever gets tripped. So thank you, just throwing experiences out there to share.
Thank you, Tara. Thank you for sharing. Thank you, Tara. Thank you for sharing. Yes, these kind of experiences do happen at meditation retreats, whether it's a silent retreat, a yoga retreat, a kundalini retreat. We're seeing a lot of that in the spiritual community. I invite you to look at YouTube. There's a podcast with Tim Ferriss, and he interviewed Dr. Holly Willoughby. If you haven't seen that already, it's vitally important to watch that. She does talk about how she started the, what is the name of it? Something House. It was really for people having spiritual emergence and had no place to go. And it was mainly for people from meditation. And now there's an increased resurgence in her work because of psychedelics. It's Willoughby, W-I-L-L-O-U-G-H-B-Y. But anyway, look up Tim Ferriss and you'll find it, about meditation gone wrong. So we're at the top of the hour. Janelle, I see your hand is up. I'll stick around, no worries. Your hand is up. I'll stick around, no worries.
I'll be quick anyway. It was just making me think about like how important it is and how much I appreciate, as I literally said to you this morning, please check me, to have community that's psychedelic safe outside of, say, like the retreat you're going to or the community you're doing medicine in, like that's also separate from that, that's not connected to the money of it all, right? Because like, you know, I've heard these narratives of like, oh, this person wanted a refund or wanted to cancel. And then we sat with it and we got to the end. I'm like, okay, beautiful, maybe. But also like when you're connected to the money, like how can you, like, I hope they also ran that through with other people in their community to be like, am I being spiritually manipulated? Like, am I being told that my resistance is like my protectors trying to stop me from, you know, doing the work and sitting with the medicine? And like, so just that importance of having that safe community outside of it where you can say, this is what I'm seeing, this is what I'm feeling, this is what's coming up, these are the things that are green, these are the things that are red. And like, and then being able to come back to that space to just like keep you balanced. Right? Like, it's just, yeah, like a lot of those like cult like communities, right? Like when she's talking about the guy in Portugal, like you see it building, right? These like cult like communities also try to keep you in isolation, right? It's like other people don't know, they haven't seen what you've seen, you know, they're just afraid of it. And some of those things are based in like, yes, when things are new, they seem scary. Absolutely. And I think we've all experienced that bit of resistance. And it's like, that's what those cult leaders tap into, is that little bit of truth, right? Like I think about things that I resisted or scoffed at 5-10 years ago. And I'm like, oh, interesting. Yeah, that was coming up against something with me. So it like hits on just an aspect of truth, but it's not the whole picture, right? And that piece of sometimes those protectors and those resistors need to be at play, because they are also telling us something. And it's not about bypassing them, it's about working with them. So I appreciate you very much in this, yeah, and all the space you've built. So
thank you, Janelle. Yeah, I would add that as another piece, maybe. Maybe not all facilitators need to be IFS informed, but knowing about internal family systems and working with parts, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, in the model of internal family systems, our goal is to become self-led, so self with a capital S. And so, yes, we do work with protector parts, but we never shame them. It's not like, oh, you have a protector part coming up, that's why you're in. No. So you're right. That's an important thing to label, is why are they saying, oh, you're in resistance, or you're just not getting it. Which is, again, why I brought up that Mark Gaffney, Aubrey Marcus podcast, because here is a sex offender saying to these women, oh, I'm so proud of you. You're in evolved relationship. Sorry, rolls eyes. All right, Carolyn, I see your hand is up.
As I've been sat here and we've continued the conversation, I've had a bit of an insight around the sort of rant about psychedelic narcissism that I've brought myself. And I left some things out, but two, Andrew, you reminded me when you said charisma, that this is a key part of the pattern that I see in these folks who then go on to do the cult stuff, is that they've got this such charismatic personalities to begin with. They, in their sort of downloads, I guess you'd want to call it, they're so obnoxious. Like that word needs to be in capital letters, like carried around on a sign. They are so obnoxious. And sometimes I feel like maybe they do know something that I don't around, because I'm much more risk averse than they are, and I am doing tiny doses, which is why I've been able to rave for 27 years and not burn out. But I think that my insight by listening to all of you guys is that to trust myself, that when this obnoxious like ranting comes, is to notice within myself, do I feel safe around this person? Like when they just said that really racist or transphobic thing, which often happens with these like guys, is like, do I actually feel safe with you now? And sort of question their bullshit, really. They're calling them, they think they're God's gift. They're walking around thinking they're enlightened. How enlightened are you, mate? If you're, you know, you've just said your racist slur and you've just like, you know, come along and like done a big transphobic whatever, you know, like you're not enlightened if you think you're better than everyone else. Like if you've had that big enlightenment that you are God's gift, well, how come you haven't realized that everyone else is too? So yeah, maybe what I'm learning from this, yeah, thank you. Maybe what I'm learning from this is to really trust myself and to be with like what I know is like, do I actually feel safe around you? No, that's bullshit what you're saying.
Yes. Thank you, Carolyn. And you know what it is? It's discernment. That is what we're learning. That's why we're having this discussion, so that you can start to tune in and learn discernment. Each of us has our own different sort of reaction system. Like you mentioned, do I feel safe? I will often say, well, how does your gut feel? Or how does that land with you? Or how does that sound to you? So some people are visual. Some people are like kinesthetic. Some people, you know, you want to just get back into touch with whatever senses for you. Like you also mentioned the word bullshit. Like, do you have a bullshit meter? Does this person come off as obnoxious? I love that one. Because yes, they will sound charismatic and they may have a kernel of truth, but you've got to ask, where does that land with me? And one of our other teachers said, if you are finding yourself triggered, you might ask, is this person offering me something that my ego has always wanted? And it's more egoic? Or is this person offering something that sounds like, oh, coming home in my soul or in my heart? And these are things that maybe you can't teach, maybe you have to learn with practice, but I think having this conversation is indeed what we needed, is to start thinking through, can I trust myself? And if there's something that just feels a little off, I say trust it and investigate, because the worst that could happen, well, you don't even want to know the worst that could happen. But I published a book a couple of years ago, Sacred Medicine, Exploring the Psychedelic Hero's Journey. And we had different authors share their experiences with shamanic ceremony and sacred medicines, all different medicines. And there was these two women named Julia, and they worked together. They're called Julia Squared. And they shared how they went to South America. And they saw red flags, you know, well, on Zoom, but for whatever reason, ignored. And one of them almost died. Like there was such mistreatment and over-medicating. It was just horrendous. And thankfully they're alive. But ignoring those red flags just because either you've committed or it's the money or you've told everyone you're going to go do this and you don't want to look bad if people hear that you're backing out. The worst thing that could happen is you lose a little money if you trust your gut. The worst thing that could happen if you disregard is you could have a truly bad trip. So
when you're around someone who really is truly enlightened, it is like coming home. You don't question it. You just like, oh, you just get that relax in you. So yeah, thank you for putting all those like bits together in my head. So thank you so much.
Yes. I don't know if I've really been around a fully enlightened being like the Buddha or the Christ or whatever, but it is true when I'm around spiritual masters, I do feel this like this sense of ease, this sense of just being in their presence. You can feel something true and pure. I thank you all for being here. I mean, just to briefly recap, being in this space and at least learning about these concepts means that you will be able to hold yourself or hold clients through ego death and shadow work. And if you can't, reach out to someone who is trained. You don't have to go it alone. You now know a little bit more about spotting the difference between trauma reactivation and potential spiritual emergence. Now you know what it's like to offer structured integration that's beyond, okay, you know, do some journal work and drink more water. And you have a sense of what it will take to stay legally and ethically sound. So once again, I want to invite you, if you have felt the call to step into this space, you don't need to be a guru, just a guide who knows how to hold the process. As I've said, the Cornerstone process does give you a map. And this is urgent work. You're here for a reason. I'm here for a reason. If you feel the call, I invite you to honor it. The world definitely needs more heart-centered guides, people who can walk through the storm into sovereignty. So if your soul is saying yes, you can join us in our certification process for the Cornerstone process for psychedelic prep and integration. You can just reply to any email you've gotten from me and we can jump on a call to see if it's a good fit. So I thank you all for being here. I hope that this was supportive and helpful for you. Please do read the Substack. If there's things that I've missed, things you want to call out, bring it back. You know, this is an ongoing dialogue. And I'm so, so grateful that you all have been here and have shared this time with me. If there are other questions, anything I missed, you can send me an email. And hey, we'll keep this going. We're always doing these free sessions to tease up the issues that are on your mind. Thank you, my dear friends. I'm sending you so many blessings and wishing you safe journeys and fruitful integration. Bye for now. Thank you for listening to the Innate Vitality Code podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Rate the podcast and subscribe. This helps me with getting my message out to a wider audience. For show notes and other episodes, visit innatevitality.com/podcast. That's vitality.com/podcast. You can also sign up for my free masterclass series. Each month, I take a deep dive into the topics of holistic healing, resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. Just visit innatevitality.com.